Here in Colombia, the stage still rattles past red brick buildings with iron shutters and doors. And since the 1850s, locals still gather at the Jack Douglas Saloon to have a drink, swap stories, and listen to music. On this program, we'll talk about this music and the role it has played in maintaining the lifestyle, customs, and traditions of this small, rural community. From Motherlode Community Radio in Sonora, welcome to The Diggins, a living folk music tradition. I'm your host, Dave Allen. Both a California state park and a National Historic Landmark District, the Gold Rush town of Columbia retains its historic character both in its architecture and in the traditions of the people who live there. Columbia is not just a tourist attraction, but a place where people live. So for Columbia, it is not just a matter of preserving buildings, but in keeping the culture of the place alive.
He was a real flamboyant, caustic character, but he had tons of charisma, and he would dress up, and he had a big old black beard, and he was totally, and he'd play his banjo on the street, and it was like fascinating.
In full regalia, he would have a big slouch hat, and he had his vest. He would have a shirt with some ruffles on it and maybe a bolo tie. And he often wore a big black greatcoat, like a big overcoat.
One of the greatest memories is Tim Armacost doing the Virginia Reel with the public and teaching these people how to dance. He would take the whole center section of the main street of town, and he would get probably 20 people, 10 people on each side or more, and he would teach them how to dance that. And the strangers from everywhere would come, and they would just have the most delightful time really experiencing something that was authentic. And he was authentic about his music and the presentations that he brought to Columbia.
Thank you, Soldier's Joy. Yeah.
Okay. Although he had family in the area, Casey Winstead did not grow up in Columbia, at least not full time.
My dad was a studio musician, and so there's no studio musician work in Sonora. So we couldn't move up there. And so we would come up and stay with my aunt, either one of my aunts and uncles. So my mom was a school teacher. So whenever she was out of school during summer vacation and then spring vacation and Christmas vacation, we would be staying up with my aunt, with one aunt and uncle or the other aunt and uncle.
By 1970, now in his early 20s, Casey Winstead was living in a commune on the East Coast. That's where he hatched the idea with Tim Armacost and a few other friends to start their own commune on the property his parents owned outside Columbia.
Well, it started in Baltimore, North Baltimore County, Maryland, at a commune called the Heathcote Community, founded by the School of Living. I got this idea I was going to start a commune in Columbia on the land that my folks bought. It was 53 acres. So I came out, and then a few months later, Tim came out, and I guess it was 71. Anyway, and so he came out with friends a little bit later. He put up a teepee, and I bought an old redwood house trailer, and we were living there. I got some jobs and stuff, but we needed money. So Tim had this idea that I'm just going to go down into Columbia, and I'm going to walk up to people. And I'm going to walk up to them and go, hey, mister, come over here. Listen, you want to hear a song you've never heard before that's 100 years old for a dollar? And so he would walk up to people like he was selling French postcards or something, you know, or selling fake watches or something like that, like out of his overcoat. He would walk up to people and do that. Later, I guess, you know, after he was playing with other musicians, he fell into more of the conventional busker kind of routine with putting a hat out in front of him. But at first, he would just accost people individually. Like, you know, there'd be like a family there with their kids and everything, and he'd walk up to the dad and go, hey, mister, listen, you want it? For a dollar, I'll sing you a song you've never heard before. It's from 100 years ago. He'd just walk up to him and say that, and people loved it. Tim used to do things he called riffs, which was like, to him, like living theater. You know, it was like performance art in real life that he would do with real people. You know, it was like put-ons that he would do, and he would like do roles and stuff. And although he generally was playing his guitar at this time, you know, this flat pick in his guitar, but sometimes he did frail his banjo. And then, you know, even more so when like people like John Ramsey, the bluegrass banjo player, came in. Dave Shapiro came out a little later.
Well, I knew I was coming to 52 acres of land that was called Manzanita Acres. I was living in Holland at the time, playing music, and I kept getting these letters from what it said on the return address was Smoking Buffalo Armacost. That's what all the letters said. And every letter said, you got to come out to this cool town that looks like, you know, Gold Rush era, because we can play in the street and make money. That's what Tim used to get me to come out. He thought I would like to play in the street. But the truth of the matter was, I wanted to get out of Baltimore. And California had been a place I always wanted to see. And playing in the street, that was okay, but it certainly wasn't my dream of dreams. But, you know, once we started doing it, I actually had a great time doing it. It was fun. So for the first 2 or 3 months, I was living on this property that Casey's family owned out Italian Bar Road in Columbia. No running water, no electricity, and extremely primitive. There was a ditch. We were growing corn, and we had to water it by hand. Actually, when I first got here, they being John Ramsey, he played banjo, Tim, and there was a guy named Andy Myers who played the jug. And it was called the Jug Band. So they were playing material more like Jim Queskin. It wasn't old-time string band as much as it became later.
One of the early commune residents was John Daughtry, who became known as Rattlesnake John.
I moved out there like 1969-70, right in that area. A friend of mine bought a cabin outside of Columbia, out Italian Bar Road. And when I would go into Columbia, at one point I met someone who played music on the street. And that was Tim Armacost. And I sat down and had a visit with him, and then I would see him from time to time. We became friends. And then I went up to the property, and Tim lived on the property. And so I would go to the property and visit. And then there was another fellow, and I think his name was Tim too, but he built a little odd-shaped cabin, seven-sided cabin on the hill. And then at some point he moved, and I moved into that cabin and fixed it up. And then I had met Susan, and so we lived in that cabin. And we used to play music on the property all the time, and people would come up and visit and hang out and eat dinner and in the summertime outdoor barbecues and play music. And sometimes we'd be there and we'd go downtown and play and back and forth. And I had learned how to play banjo from Tim. And then and kind of got to a point where I was, you know, playing more regular on the banjo. And I had learned mandolin too. So I kind of learned those banjo, mandolin, and guitar. And guitar was always my main instrument. So, you know, I got more familiar with old-time music. And then his friend David Shapiro moved out from Baltimore, and I met Dave. And, yeah, I remember playing out in front of Bill's barbershop there. And so I remember playing there and then going down to the saloon, Jack Douglas Saloon, and playing in the saloon. And, you know, just picking different spots on the street, especially if somebody else showed up, you know, having different, you know, people come and go and play, sit in. And just, there just seemed to be kind of a rotation. So it was all, you know, pretty fun in general of just the different combinations that would end up playing on the street some days, you know. I remember us playing on the street one time and somebody just coming over and say, somebody's getting married over here. Can you come in and play some music? And we just, you know, walked in, and I think they paid us a little bit and we played some tunes while they got married. So I kind of just enjoyed, you know, the variety of people and music, you know, and how different people played. Like, that's what was interesting, is just different people had, you know, their own maybe style or songs, I guess, and everybody would maybe work around those songs, so different people would just take turns of singing songs and playing tunes, you know. Sort of like everybody influenced each other, it seemed like it in those times, you know.
Dave Shapiro remembers learning to play old-time music, mostly from the other musicians playing in the street.
Back then, you had to learn yourself, or meet a live musician who already knew it that could show you one of those ways. Yeah, most of the material we got from technology was long playing records. I think we got a few things from, like, for instance, Reef. They were digging in the ruins of what later was rebuilt to be the City Hotel. And they had some people doing archaeology there. One of them was a really lovely fiddler named Linda Keane.
Right.
And she taught me some Irish tunes, but that's one way I learned some music. That was the first time I ever learned any authentic Irish stuff. And there was one other guy that knew a bunch of, like, Doc Bog songs, O Death and stuff. His name was Jonathan Bora. He was a mathematician, so he was... He would play, you know, he was a very primitive musician, but he did know some cool songs.
Tuck old hen, cluck and sing, ain't laid an egg since late last spring. Tuck old hen, cluck and squall, ain't laid an egg since late last fall. Cause you ain't laid an egg since late last fall.
That was Tim Armacost and Bob Tagney playing as the duo Devil's Own, performing Cluck Old Hen. Here's another by Devil's Own.
glass of wine. Old mother Hogo, she got drunk, swam across the river on a pumpkin vine. Diddle daddle do, daddle do, daddle diddle daddle, diddle daddle do, daddle do, dum day. Diddle daddle do, daddle do, daddle diddle daddle, diddle daddle do, daddle do, dum day.
John Folsom's parents owned and operated the Uptown Theater in neighboring Sonora, a small pocket movie house that at the time was the only theater in the area.
Oh, Tim Armacost, yeah. What a character. Oh, what a character. And, well, Tim Armacost, now here's the deal. Tim Armacost showed up in 1971. And how I met him, he came in to see a movie at the Uptown Theater.
Folsom bought his first bagpipe in 1970. At the time, he was playing saxophone in a rock and roll band. By the following year, he had taught himself to play the bagpipe and began performing in the streets of Columbia.
I decided I wasn't really that great. I mean, I played guitar, but I wasn't really that great at guitar, and I wasn't great at the banjo. And I had my dad's fiddle, but I was horrible at that because, you know, it. But I knew that the bagpipe was a possibility to play, entertain the tourists and the locals, and actually make some money. Initially, I only had street clothes, regular blue jeans and a work shirt, and maybe I had a flat cap on or something, you know. But people would come up and they'd go, "Where's your kilt? Where's your kilt? Where's your kilt? Where's your kilt?" And so ultimately, after 2 years of being badgered by the public, I decided to go and buy a used kilt. I bought a sporran, which is the little purse that hangs down in front. And I bought a matching tartan tie. And once I did that, and this is hard to explain to the folkies, but when I got the kilt, suddenly I was employed at weddings, funerals, Masonic investitures. Well, later on, you know, Ron Wilson and I, the guy that wrote Wipeout, and I were playing there, really made money there. Ron Wilson was a showman all in of his own, you know, fantastic drummer and showman and boy. And not only did I play the Scottish bagpipe, and I do Camptown Races 5 mile long, and I take the blowpipe and go doo-dah, doo-dah, you know, and everybody else, the tourists would go doo-dah, doo-dah, you know. And then I would play the fife. I always play all the kinds of weird instruments like hurdy-gurdies and all these bagpipes from all over the place and flutes. And
one of his favorite gags was getting the bagpipe drunk.
If I needed to start the bagpipe, you could throw any 80 proof, which is 40% alcohol. And what that does, you throw it into the bag, and as the alcohol evaporates, it steams the reeds with enough water to play, and it's equal to about 30 minutes of warming up the bagpipe with your breath. So if you want to get a start, you just throw the alcohol in there, and it wasn't drinking it. The bagpipe was drinking it, see? And at various times and places, when I was at the St. Charles, you know, somebody's, oh, let me buy you a drink. And I'd say, great, well, and I pour it into the bagpipe bag, you know. And the guy'd say, well, that's a waste of good rum or whiskey or whatever. And I'd say, well, the bagpipe needs a drink. And the drunk would go, yeah, that's right. The bagpipe needs a drink. That's right, you know. So anyway, I got out of having to be drunk in order to play or any of that.
Casey Winstead began to notice more and more musicians showing up at the property to jam.
So other musicians would come by. I don't even know how this happened. It just sort of got to be a thing, you know, and it really got to be a thing, you know.
Chris Stevenson thinks that one of the reasons for the large influx of musicians was that Columbia College had just opened and was attracting students to its new campus.
I'd like to say something about Columbia College. At that time, it was brand new. And my brother and sister, we had moved from Nevada over to San Andreas, and my brother and sister both went there when it first started, too. And it was real interesting because it was right after the end of the, or towards the end of the Vietnam War, and all these young guys and young people came up from the Bay Area or San Francisco, L.A., and there was a lot of people on G.I. Bill, a lot of vets going there, and they were all just into the arts, and there was a pottery and theater. So it was Columbia College was a wild and crazy place. Yes. Then. A lot of young people, and there was a lot of music. So it was brand new, and that beautiful pond and all that. So that's all. Yeah. Anyway, it was idyllic. And there were a lot of old shacks and houses that were really cheap rent. I mean, you could go out, live out in the woods if you wanted to.
Opening in 1970, Columbia College is a part of the Yosemite Community College District and is located on 280 acres of wooded foothills adjacent to the town. Bob Tagney transferred to Columbia College after spending a summer here.
Yeah, I came up the summer of 72. Well, I came up here because a friend had a cabin up here, and I was going to college in San Mateo, and so I spent the summer up here, which is some of the first people I met was Tim Armacost and Dave Shapiro were playing in front of the barbershop in Columbia, and I invited him over for dinner the first day that I met him, and so we got to know each other. And, of course, I had been playing for years in bands down in the Bay Area in San Mateo. And what happened is when I saw that there was a college here, a junior college, and I was going to junior college in San Mateo, I could just transfer my units because I had a place to live and met a bunch of musicians and basically fell in love with Columbia. So that's what I did. I went on to the college here and met a lot more musicians and finally got my degree from the college, an AA degree, and I played in a lot of different bands here, but always played in Columbia and centered out of Columbia. Basically started with Tim Armacost and Dave Shapiro. Tim was totally acoustic and folk music and traditional, whereas Dave Shapiro was, like myself, had played in like Beatle rock groups and, well, we had surf music and stuff. I don't know if they had that in Maryland as much as in California. But that's what I was doing before I got up here. I hooked up with Tim and he taught me a lot about playing that type of music. You know, I was also playing electric bass with David Shapiro and playing in country bands and blues and rock and stuff like that. But people wanted to have, they didn't want electric bass. They wanted acoustic bass. Anyway, so I got the acoustic bass. I bought it from a guy in Sonoma, John Jambody, who was playing with, back then, Huey Lewis had a group called the Moonlighters. The Moonlighters were like basically Commander Cody's band. Anyway, so I learned the acoustic bass and that went on. Anyway, so I learned playing that. And I also had a mandolin at the time. And I learned to play the mandolin. when I first got up here, Tom Cornette and Maureen, his wife, had the Douglas, and they had Saturnalia. Saturnalia was Billy Mack and the Wagon Wheels. And he had Roy Honeycutt, who said he played pedal steel with Bob Wills, and I suppose he did. And Steve Slatt on guitar and Kurt Vesser on the bass. They were just so incredibly loud, and they'd be playing stuff like, I mean, it was totally out of period stuff, you know. But yeah, back then, the Douglas Saloon, they had some loud country western music, and we did a show in there, now that I think about it, with Frank Wakefield, the infamous mandolin player, Jesus Loves This Mandolin Player, number 85 or whatever. Yeah, I remember. He goes, you know, that stage isn't very big. And I go, well, it was big enough for Dave Shapiro, Fiddlin' Dick, Tom Stern, Frank Wakefield, myself with an acoustic bass. And the piano was all tucked in the back. But we played on that stage quite a bit. The thing about Columbia is that the audience, for me, is as much of a show as we are for the audience. Because you're playing for people from all over the world, all over the country, all different ages, races, religions. And the thing that I have always loved the most is watching these babies when they start dancing for the first time and their parents get so excited, look at you dancing, you know? And you see them dancing around and doing the baby dance and
was Bob Tagney performing his composition, Moonlight Bay Rag, live at the Columbia Marble Quarry Campground in the fall of 1976. You're listening to Welcome to the Diggins, a living folk music tradition. This program is a production of Motherlode Community Radio and is made possible by a grant from the California Arts Council. I'm your host, Dave Allen. Coming up,
since I was living upstairs over the music store in this abandoned hotel that my mother had leased the whole building, I guess, to help my brother out, I started renting out rooms. So anyway, a little music scene started there, because everybody was coming into the store, and we started rehearsing upstairs above the former lobby of the City Hotel. the Cole Music Store.
Garden of Delights String Band comes from the historical fact sometime, I don't know, maybe 1200 AD or something, there was a group of assassins and they used to smoke hashish. Origin of the word assassin comes from this group that came to be known as the Hashashins, and their leader was Hassan Isaba. They used to hang out in this garden and smoke hash, and it was the slang name for it was the Garden of Delights, and that's where the name came from. I'm pretty sure Tim, who was always entranced by those type of stories, you know, a bunch of killers that smoke hash, I'm pretty sure he wanted to name it that.
For 25 years, four moves and three owners, the Cole Music Company in Sonora acted as an important hub for the local music culture. Although Bob Cole was born in Sonora, he never lived there until his brother Gene opened a music store.
When I came to Sonora, I believe it was the summer of 1971. I came up here because my brother, Gene Cole, started this music store in Sonora, and it was located in the lobby, what was used to be the lobby of the Sonora City Hotel, and that's in the back. There's a barbershop back there in the back. Well, the lobby to the hotel was right next to that, and it was a pretty big room, and so that's where the first Cole Music Store was. And if you went, they had steps in the side there that went up to the rooms. There were rooms up there. They were all empty, except they were furnished with beds and closets. And there was a sink in all the rooms. And so I came to Columbia because I was just sort of wandering around in between electric bands. But what happened was, is I enrolled at Columbia College and took a bunch of music classes and a whole bunch of classes, and I met a bunch of people looking for a place to stay. And my mother let me do this because she had leased that whole building, the whole city hotel, the whole upstairs and the lobby. And I said, I want to rent these rooms out to my friends from college. And so I did. There was only, I think there were something like 12 rooms and two bathrooms. There were two hallways and a bathroom down the hall on each side of the hotel. So what happened was it turned into Party Central for Columbia College. Of course, my brother having the music store, it became the center of music. And so I met everybody that played music. And there were some, you know, electric rock and roll musicians. But surprisingly, this whole banjo boom in around here. Everybody wanted to learn the banjo. And I think that was because of those guys, Tim Armacost and Dave Shapiro, and John Ramsey. All three of them played banjo. And they got students, and I think they were all giving lessons through the music store to these perspiring banjo players. Tim being the center of the whole thing, and the first guy I ever saw play street music, he was playing with these two other guys in Columbia. And I remember the first day I saw them, the three of them, whew, it just sort of knocked me out. So I went and hunted up and found my friend with the stand-up bass, and I was in that band within a week as the bass player. And the band got really good, the Garden of Delights. That's how I got into it. And then, of course, we all rehearsed in those upstairs rooms of the City Hotel, and it turns out it became a gathering place for other musicians. After that first band that I was in started, all of a sudden there were bands cropping up everywhere of like that, like us. It just became a big thing, but like that. And it was real unique, and people had never heard it before. And so we got jobs everywhere. We just worked, we played constantly, and the band got really good as a result of that. And we made money. We were all making money. It was really fun. We all love playing, but it's fun to make money at what you do, too. And at that time, we were all, that's all we were doing, and we were making enough money to live on.
Chris Stevenson's sister rented a room at the City Hotel, and that's where she first met Bob Cole.
First time I ever met Bob was when the City Hotel was still running, and we happened to go up there to visit my sister, Rebecca, and I saw all these musicians. I was blown away. I'm starting to play banjo, but I got a job at the Columbia House, and at that time it was like a McDonald's. People would come up, order their food, and then you'd have to call them again, and they'd take their own tray, so there was no tips. When it was slow, the owner, manager, would send us girls out to wash the windows, and I'd be washing the window, looking out and watching him playing in the street. And he was making five times as much money as me, having fun, drinking beer. The first time I ever played in the street was with a little band called the Merry Melody String Band. And it was Rattlesnake John and Bob and David Gessett, who's a famous violin maker now.
A music store had been established in Sonora, and that was Eugene Cole's, Cole Music. And I came into the store, and I said, does anyone here play old-time or bluegrass music? And he goes, yes, my brother Bob does. And so Bob and I started playing music with David Gessett. And then in that time, Chris started playing banjo.
Well, they tell me that butter's 3 shillings a pound. See the rich farmer's daughters, how they ride up and down. If you ask them the reason, they sigh, oh, alas. There's a war on in France, and the cows have no grass. Singing honesty's all out of fashion. These are the rigs of the times, times, my boy. These are the rigs of the times. Well, next comes the butcher. Oh, I must bring him in. Charges $5 a pound, and he thinks it's no sin. Puts his thumb on the scales, and he makes them go down, and he swears it's true weight, though it wants half a pound. Singing honesty's all out of fashion. These are the rigs of the times, times, my boy. These are the rigs of the times. Next comes the publican. Oh, I must bring him in. Charges $5 a pint, and he thinks it's no sin. When he brings in the measure is short, and the top of the pot is popped off with the cloth. Singing honesty's all out of fashion. These are the rigs of the times, times, my boy. These are the rigs of the times. Now the very best plan that I ever could find was to puff them all off on a huge gale of wine. And when they got up in the sky, it would burst, and the biggest old rascal come tumbling down first. Singing honesty's all out of fashion. These are the rigs of the times, times, my boy. These are the rigs of the times.
This song is called This World Can't Stand Long. Into the truth.
That was the Garden of Delight String Band in concert at Columbia College's Manzanita Hall Theater, November 1972.
Cole Music in Sonora, a real music store. Cole Music got Mora. Everything you're looking for. Instance, you can buy your kid a fiddle, large or little, a trumpet or a saxophone. You can purchase an electric bass. You can rent to own, buy a cheap kazoo and a penny whistle too. Get your guitar, a new pick guard. We got strings, picks, mic straps, reed sticks and other crap. Put them on your Visa card. Cole Music in Sonora, we're open every day
except Sunday.
Cole Music got Mora. Everything you're hoping to play. Lessons, repairs, banjos, books, bows, bridges, there's nothing like Cole Music in Sonora. I'll see you there tomorrow. Cole Music in Sonora, a real music store.
Shortly after an article appeared in the local paper about life in the rooms above the store, Cole Music lost its lease. After a short-lived move, the store settled in downtown Sonora on Washington Street. Gene Cole sold the music store to Kent Stevenson during a night of heavy drinking in the bar across the street.
I'd gotten to know Red Simpson, and I was playing in this little band with him. And Gene, I had gotten to know Gene. I was buying authentic instruments so I could play in Red's authentic instrument band. We were going to call it the George Washburn Memorial Band, so we all had to have Washburn instruments. And we kept drinking, and he was buying me drinks and somehow got me to shake hands and agree to buy the store. You know, he talked me into buying the store, and the next day, next morning, I woke up and I said, I can't buy this store, man. I don't know anything about music or very little and less about business. He says, well, you're going to learn more in the next year than you ever learned in your life, Kent. And, of course, we didn't even have a contract. I think he wrote down on an envelope, Kent owes Gene $14,000. That's what we had agreed. I would buy $14,000 worth of you know, stock from him. So I started running the music store. John Rattlesnake was working for me. And there were, then Gene started putting conditions on it. He said, oh, well, you have to keep John on. He goes, and Cliff's going to come back somewhere. He goes, you have to hire Cliff. And then he also, he said, you know, you kind of are going to be responsible for the musicians in the county. He said, so you got to make sure they're okay and take care of them.
So a lot of musicians moved around at that time, and we used Cole Music as a contact and a mail delivery. It was our mailing address for quite a few years.
And a rehearsal.
And
I remember you playing. I remember you rehearsing in there with, who's the guy from McCollumy Hill?
Randy Sparks.
Randy Sparks.
Right, that was in 1980.
Yeah. A lot of people rehearsed in
there. But it was a central place, and it could be open late at night, and it was available for a meeting place, and we used it. There's a poster that we have that has the Cole Music address and phone number.
It was really central, and we did a lot of billboard, or people would call and say, my bass player, you know, broke his leg. And we'd find somebody that could play bass, you know. It made for some very interesting combinations.
Cole Music scene was really, I recall it being something really special for anybody who walked in for the first time. It would just, like, blow their mind to see all these vintage instruments and new instruments. And you could hear string music coming from out in the back, and you could see a guy working on a guitar or something. And it was really lively place, and it had a really great vibe.
As far as the character of the store, I wanted it to be, and because it was the easiest thing to have it happen, was just to let the character evolve, reflecting the combination of personalities that were working there. You know, there's usually, I usually had four people, you know, as far part-time as salespeople, and then several repair people. The character of the store changed. I remember when my son was born, within 6 months, Rick Thorpe, who was my electronics technician, he had a baby, and Dave and Phyllis had Burl, right? So there's three babies within 6 months of each other crawling all over that store, you know. People would walk in, it would look like a nursery. So yeah, it was a family. It was a real family.
Kent Stevenson lived in Columbia, right off the main street, in what is now called the Martinez House. It became the hangout for street musicians who would use the house as a rehearsal and staging area.
That house, I think, was central to a lot of activity in Columbia, that's for sure.
Mandolinist Kenny Hall would frequent the Martinez House and became an influence for many of these young street musicians.
Because I remember he would tell you what key all of your appliances were in. I mean, they have pitches, I guess. Yeah, Kenny Hall was around sometime. He was at the store. He came to the store a bunch of times.
At that time, Kent was renting from the actual Martinez family, whose descendants built the home in the 1870s.
But it was owned by Mrs. Martinez and Mrs. Gawley. Oh, Mrs. Gawley was the older one. She was about 80, and the daughter, Mrs. Martinez, was 60. And then I was on the phone with them. They called the store, and they said, we would like to know if your son was born in that house. And I said, in the living room. And they both said simultaneously, so were we.
Cole Music also created a sound company for the local music events and festivals that began taking place in the area.
But I remember the first sound job was we did Cheap Suit Serenaders.
Cheap Suit
Serenaders. And Jonathan, we didn't have any monitors, so he said, well, we can sure use these Shure Vocal Masters and turn them on their side, right? Well, they had a cello in that band, right? Oh, my God, yeah. It was a nightmare.
I was giving lessons by this time, and there was a little upstairs room there that I used to give. I was teaching guitar lessons. I remember when the mania changed from banjos to fiddles. And all of a sudden everybody was learning fiddle, and the first person I heard playing the fiddle was Dick Stanley Fiddlin' Dixie Alley, and he was just great. And then we haven't mentioned Mike Fela much, but he's another guy that was in this whole scene and became a fiddle player. And at one time, in the streets of Columbia, we had Mike Phelan, Tom Wentworth, and me and Bob Scott. We were all playing fiddle together. It was like a fiddle orchestra in Columbia. And we played in the St. Charles Saloon frequently.
You know, I bought a fiddle. I bought a fiddle from Dave. I bought Dave Gussett's first violin.
Fiddle player that we played with in the streets of Columbia.
Yeah, when Garden of Delight's string band, John Ramsey actually learned how to play violin, fiddle, an Irish style. And he would play that. He learned it from Linda Keane that was in Columbia.
It was an archaeologist. Archaeology.
And an Irish style fiddle player. So John Ramsey did play, and Bob and Fiddle in Red
and Dave
Simpson
Gussett.
And Dave Gussett played fiddle.
And they all taught at the store. I remember when I wandered into the store.
Also,
Gene told me there were three fiddle teachers there.
David Gussett, this fiddle player, went on to become a world-renowned violin builder.
He started here playing with our little string band. We called ourselves the Merry Melodies String Band with Rattlesnake John and Dave Gussett. And Dave Cavanaugh was probably a repairman fairly early because he took lessons from John Ramsey, banjo lessons, and so he probably learned a few things from Gene Cole before Gene left.
Yeah, my brother Gene was a repairman. He was a wood guy. He may have even built some instruments.
He built fiddles.
And bows, too.
He taught Dave Cavanaugh some of those tricks.
Give my blankets to my buddy. I give the fleece to Diamond Joe.
After 10 years of managing Cole Music, Kent Stevenson sold the store to Dave Cavanaugh, who often worked there doing instrument repairs. Richard Scholer became Cavanaugh's partner.
Well, he was working as the curator at Moaning Cave, and then him and I met and moved over to Columbia, and he started working the store. Well, I met him, and we had been playing music, and we were roommates. We got a house together, and I think that's when he started doing repairs, and that was in the mid-70s somewhere. And then when was it? It was 1985 when you sold the music store to Dave and I.
Yep. I had to load up from a show all by myself, and it was all sitting there in the truck, and I didn't want to unload it. I walked out of the City Hotel hungover the next morning, and you guys were playing, and Dave said, "Hey, you going to sell me that store or not?" And I realized he'd always wanted to buy the store. I had not thought of him. And I said, "You got the money?" He goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, we'll talk."
His dad loaned us the money, and and we kept the store there for a while. But his dad owned another building, and he wanted us to lease it from him. And so we reluctantly moved the location to his dad's building on 70 West Stockton Road and moved Cole Music Company over there. And it definitely changed the vibe, and, you know, but it was a very successful business. As long as we could hang in there and we kept customers happy, it was a good business. And we had some of the same people. We had Rick Thorpe come over with us, and what a great guy, and he saved our butts, because part of that buying that music store meant buying that sound company and having the responsibility of that. Well, none of us knew how to hook it up. I learned so much from him, but as it turned out, Dave and I both got out of the music store about 10 years later, and I kept the sound company going until the pandemic.
This next song is called Dooley. It's a prohibition type song.
It's about an old guy who had a still up in the mountains. There's a moral to be learned in this song somewhere. Up on the hill, he had two fine daughters and a 40-gallon still. One gal washed the boiler, other washed the spout, and Mama corked the bottles when old Dooley passed them out.
Dooley,
run up a holler,
Dooley,
trying to make a dollar.
Dooley, give me a swaller and I'll pay you back someday.
Listening to Welcome to the Diggins, a living folk music tradition. Coming up in our next episode.
Coming up with band names, and the bands didn't last very long. They'd maybe last a winter or a summer, and then you change, you know, personnel and get a different name. Well, you know how that goes.
Sure. Another person who always says that's the way to go is Sourdough Slim. In fact, he's the one that told me that, I think. He said, Dave, if you can find something that nobody else is doing, that's the way to go. Makes perfect sense. And I think Fiddlesticks was like that, too. There wasn't anybody else like Fiddlestick. I mean, you could say there's other string bands, but the patter, the songwriting, and the particular combination of people, the clothes, it was a unique thing. There's nothing else like Fiddlestick.
Welcome to the Diggins, a living folk music tradition. Is a production of Motherlode Community Radio. Funding for this project was made possible by a grant from the California Arts Council. From the studios of KAADLP in Sonora, I'm your host, Dave Allen. Thanks for listening.